Great start, huh? The presence of the Lord is here, and good to be in His presence and worship Him. And thank you all, especially the three of you that rushed from Northern Columbus to get here. We appreciate it. So, almost qualified for driving from the farthest. Yeah, yeah. The Fargo and Wisconsin people would argue with you, but thank you all. Appreciate it. And they're going to be, we'll have worship tomorrow morning and tomorrow afternoon. Phil and Abby will be leading us, and then our band will be here Friday night and Saturday morning. We're looking forward to just continue to worship with them. If you are at a host home and you have not met your host person, afterwards you can go out to the welcome kiosk where you registered, and hosts and people who need to meet their hosts can meet out there afterwards. So, we are very honored to have Phil Strout here. As Phil likes to tell the story, and I've heard him tell it a couple times, you know, his whole Christian life has kind of been on mission with God. That I think he got asked to go on the mission field shortly after he was saved, and then shortly after he was married. I think his, if I remember right, your honeymoon may have been in South America, so doing missions. So his whole life has been that. After being on the mission field for a while in the 90s, he came back to his home state of Maine and was part of the Portland Vineyard, planted that vineyard in the 2000s, early 2000s, worked for Vineyard USA, doing some mission work and primarily beginning to help the vineyard begin mission partnerships, and some of you all are in partnerships. 2004, he was asked to pastor the Lewiston, Maine Vineyard, and he served there also as regional overseer from 2004 to 2011. In 2011, Phil was picked as the national director of the vineyard, and I just remember when he was when they made the announcement, I thought, you know, I don't know much about Phil. You know, I hadn't crossed paths much with him, and I had heard him give a phenomenal devotion on the cup at an area leader and regional leader retreat, which is a great devotion, and I just wondered what kind of a what kind of a national director he would be, just because I didn't know him. And I can tell you, he is the right leader for our time in the vineyard, and I know that he's God's guy for this time, and we're honored to have him. I've seen him just navigate some pretty big things, and he's done it with compassion and with wisdom. And one of the things I've loved is he's resisted, I think, the temptation to give sound bites that may have satisfied different groups all around. He just kind of walked through it, and instead he's just been patient, seen what the Father has been doing in each and every circumstance, and I've loved watching him kind of navigate those things. We reached out to Phil before the 2012. He had just been announced that he was going to be the national director and would be installed later in 2012. We reached out to him and said, hey, would you mind cutting a video for us? And he was gracious and cut like a 10 or 15 minute video for our very first conference and took time out. He was trying to transition from national director and transition to Lewiston Vineyard there, Pathways Vineyard, and was a part of it. Really from day one. He's championed us. I think at any meeting I've been at, he's usually mentioned small town, and we're grateful for that, that you've championed this thing. We're also blessed to have him here because he spent the last 10 days in England. I think he flew into Columbus on Tuesday, and he flies out to Brazil on this coming Tuesday. So in between London and Brazil, he wanted an exotic location, and so he came to Lancaster, Ohio. So Phil, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Joel. Well, good evening. How you doing? You guys tired? Yeah, I bet you. I understand. What time is it? So 7:30. Yeah, it's about 1:30, I think, in England right now. So if I fall asleep during my talk, just throw something. Holler, stand up, speak in tongues, do something. I really, really have looked forward to this, to come and to share with you and just be around this weekend. I've never, ever been asked to give a talk, and then after everybody else's talk, I get to make a comment. I have never been invited to do that. There are a lot of times I would have loved to have done that. I can think of many situations where I would have loved to give comment to some talks, but so I'm not quite sure if I'll even do it. But it's a very tempting. It's a tempting thing. I don't want to knock this over. Jan and I have been thrilled over these last few years to serve the Vineyard in another way. We actually met the Vineyard in South America. We were missionaries in Chile in the 80s and started in Brazil and then switched over to Chile. And I was given a couple of tapes by this guy named John Wimber and didn't know anything about it. I threw it in my Walkman, if you can remember those little devices. Any of you have those in your, you know, garage or anything like that? Or I threw in a tape, and it was this guy talking about how to love the whole body of Christ, and just an incredible, incredible teaching. And about 18, 20 seconds into the tape, just the Spirit of God nudged me and said, "By the way, Pee-wee, this is your tribe. These are your people." I'd never heard of the Vineyard. Never heard of John Wimber, didn't know anything about it, but the Spirit of God, I mean instantly, before I even listened to the tape, the Lord said, "These are your people." And went through a process. That was about 1987, so we've been on this journey a while. And it's just, you know, I'm not a, you would think with the job that I have, I'd be a card-carrying, flag-waving Vineyard guy, but to be honest with you, I'm really not. I'm much more a flag-waving kingdom of God, in love with Jesus, and my tribe is the Vineyard. And I like the Vineyard. I guess I love the Vineyard. I love most things about the Vineyard. There's some things about the Vineyard that have driven me crazy for years. But here we are. We're not much, but this is all we got. This is what we have. This is the reality that we have all been given, and I like the family. It's growing. It's an ever-growing family. Last week we met with the national directors from the 13 AVCs. It's and with five other leaders from five other countries who sometime over the next probably 24 to 36 months will become new AVCs. We had leaders from 18 countries representing 24 different countries. And we are noticing a real shift that white middle-aged men are no longer in the majority. As a matter of fact, we were the minority in this meeting, having Vineyard national directors from Africa, from Asia, from the emerging Vineyard movements in Indonesia, in the Philippines, in Mexico. From the Himalayan belt of northern India and Nepal, and we had nine languages being spoken in the room. It was cool. It was a wonderful, wonderful reality of what God is doing all over the earth with people from tribe, tongue, and nations. It's a real thing. How many of you were in Columbus last summer? Just curious. You know, we got a little piece of it. We got a little taste of it where folks from 60-some countries came together. We worshiped in nine different languages. There's something happening here, and it's just a real joy to be a part of it. And I'm really thrilled you're here. For me, I grew up in small-town America. I was born in a town, a little mill town, a paper mill town in the woods of Maine, with a grand total of population, 2,500 people. And I like small town. I live in the woods now. I'm much more of a guy of the earth. I've lived in large cities. I've worked in large cities. I've planted churches in large cities. I've helped people do that. But we've also planted in small town America, smaller cities. I know you've got a term. What's the term you use? The micropolitan. So that's, you know, something like a Portland, Maine maybe would fit into that. I don't know exactly what your definition of it is, but I liked it. I just like the word. It sounds cool, but I assumed it was something along that. But, you know, there's something about this, and I really want to say there's a reason that it's hard, maybe, but this is what we do. And here's the good news. Church planting was not the vineyard's idea. Church planting has been around for a long, long, long time. And if you are planting a church, or you're going to plant a church, or you're pastoring a church today, I think the good news is we didn't think this up. We didn't get ourselves into this. This is something that we've been laid a hold of for. And that we belong as part. Now, I'm just going to use the word fraternity, and I know that's masculine. I don't mean it that way. I could say sorority or whatever word. You fill in the blank. But we actually do. And I'm going to speak my part directly to you who are either pastoring, you're church planting, or you're helping lead a church. Or you wouldn't be here tonight. You wouldn't plan on being here tomorrow and the next day if you weren't pretty well vested in what you're doing. You're pretty committed to it. You're helping lead a church that is the church of Jesus Christ. And in that assignment as a leader, you belong to a group of people that through the ages have been set aside by the assignment of God to serve His purposes and serve His people. There's a reason why we're so concerned on good training and good preparation and good integrity and good character in the leaders of the vineyard and the church planters and the pastors is because we have been entrusted with thousands and thousands of people's lives. So I'm glad God does a thorough job in vetting us. A few sneak through, but God does a pretty good job. And I know He feels very affirmed in me saying that. But there is, it really is. So no matter where you're at in your journey in pastoring or what the particular assignment that I want to give a little time to tonight, you and I can rest in the fact that people have been doing this for centuries. Different context, different time, different battles, but really the same thing. Announcing the good news of Jesus Christ. And announcing it and announcing it and announcing it. And that's the evangelism. And I'm going to talk about that as we go a little bit. But I'm really excited to hear the guys unpack this over the weekend. But it's not something new. So men and women through the ages have been given the assignment, sovereignly picked by the Lord and given an assignment, and with that responsibility and authority. And so when you serve where you serve, I want to tell you something, God's going to back you up. We're not out on a ride like we thought this up. If I thought that church planting and church leading was something that I had to muscle up for, I don't know that I'd do it. I mean, straight up honesty. I don't know that I would do it because working with earthlings is hard. But I think of the men and the women that through the centuries, beginning in the first century, and we read in the book of Acts, that if we had the time, we don't, if we had the time, we could unpack church planting, beginning with the adventures of Paul and his team, and we could go century by century, first century, second century, third century, fourth century, fifth century, the religious orders begin. They begin to spread out across that Mediterranean into Europe and slowly just begin permeating the earth with people doing exactly what you and I do, in essence, announcing good news, when people respond, discipling them into Jesus Christ and making Him known and understood. And then from those disciples, recognizing in others that may also be added to that group that is to lead, and we call that leadership multiplication. And that being inclusive in our context of men and women from different languages, races, ethnicity, etc., being incredibly inclusive. And then we just do it again. I've just given you EDLD. Now, we've only been using this a short time, about a year and a half in the vineyard, because we needed something to ground us and to take the pressure off from the 21st century speed. And we are driven at times by sloganeering, and pressure comes across our desk because every day something new is coming, every day. And pastors are bombarded with, if you're really going to be relevant, this is what you need to be doing. Oh, no, I set out in ministry to be irrelevant. Well, of course I want to be relevant. That term at times just drives me crazy. If you're really going to be relevant in a postmodern world, if you're going to be relevant in the emerging generation, if you're going to be relevant to millennials, as if the goal in our life is to be irrelevant. But our pastors are bombarded that because of the speed of everything, that we're always looking for that next thing. What's that next thing? Maybe we came to the small church, small town church planning conference, and I'm finally going to find the secret, and boom, it's going to blow up. This is it. Sorry. We're going to talk about evangelism, discipleship, leadership, multiplication, and diversity. And by using diversity, I just mean the inclusiveness that we look at leadership with and the folks in our church. But we can unpack that more a little bit later. But I just feel so, so exercised at this point in my life, because I basically work with leaders. So I feel so exercised to take the pressure off, especially when it comes to the gimmicks and the sexy slogans and the boom, bang, pow, wow, there it is, the new. Because, you know something, in the end, what we do is we announce good news. We tell people about Jesus Christ. We announce good news. We're good news people. This is what we do. And people have been doing what you do for centuries. Wouldn't you like to have a talk with a few of them? Let me tell you something. I have no nostalgia to return to the 16th century and follow my Jesuit brothers all over the world. One guy, Benedetto de Goes, sets out from the center of the Mughal Empire, which is northern India, and his assignment as a young Jesuit, his assignment was to find a shortcut to China through the Himalayas and look for this mystical empire called Cathay. That was his thing, because they were losing so many people as the further east they went, they were losing more and more lives. So somebody had the brainstorm that if you just sort of go north in India, you will come to China. So 3 years later, Benedetto de Goes finds himself in China, and two things he realized. He wrote home. This is what he wrote back to Rome. Number one, there is no mystical kingdom called Cathay. It's actually China. Number two, don't ever come this way again. It's not a shortcut. Then he died. That was his assignment. That's what he did with his life. He took all those years becoming a linguist, and he was, imagine what he's crossing the Himalayas. This is 16th century. He's got no oxygen. He doesn't have, North Face equipment. He doesn't have L.L. Bean and Cabela's equipment and oxygen tanks and ice boots and, you know, thermal underwear. We follow in the footsteps of incredible people. I have no nostalgia for John Wesley. Are you kidding me? Circuit riding? If I was a circuit rider today, and I would have had to leave for Lancaster 3.5 months ago. I don't have any nostalgia for that. I get to go home Sunday night. We'll do the services here. I'll get on a plane to Columbus, fly to New York, go to New York, be up in Maine. My wife will pick me up at 6:30. I'll be home by 7 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. John Wesley wouldn't get home until next fall. Why would I be jealous of John Wesley? You know, we can always think somebody else had it better, had it easier, was more understood. Let me just tell you something. You and I have been given the assignment to be God's leaders in the 21st century, the genesis of a whole new century and millennium. We've been given the jobs to be shepherds, under-shepherds of the flock of God in a time that is both complicated and exhilarating. We live in warp speed. We live in a world where technology and science and communication and unfortunately expectation is just rising. I was thinking the other day, when crossing from New York to London, which used to be a 3-month trip, today is 2 movies and a nibble. That's what the Brits call for snacks. 2 movies and a nibble, and you're in London. So when people say, "Oh, my flight's delayed, I'm so angry, I'm an hour late." Oh, really? Why? Because everything drives us. There's a great book by a young man named, Kent Annan. It's called Slow Kingdom Coming. Slow Kingdom Coming. And it's basically, how do we navigate in the tension of the already not yet of the kingdom when we live in a world that doesn't want to hear anything about that? It wants everything now because everything is right now. We live in a drive-through society, a microwave reality, but God didn't get the memo because God still does things the way he does them. So we're in good company, number one. It's quite humbling, isn't it? It's quite humbling to think that you and I have been given the opportunity to be under shepherds, under Jesus Christ. That one blows my mind. That through the centuries, men and women have been given these jobs. And for some reason, you're amongst them. We're amongst them. That's all. And that's not like a, aren't we something? No, because we really know what we are. I've always said, are you kidding me? When the Vineyard Board asked my wife and I to do this job, the night they announced it to us and we basically come to an agreement, my wife and I went back to our hotel, tucked ourselves in bed about 2 a.m, and we started laughing like teenagers, 2 teenage kids. Like, are you kidding me? Is the Vineyard this desperate? This is what this has come to? A couple of kids from the state of Maine, a little mill town in Maine. I looked at Jan and I said, well, honey, we're in over our heads again. And our whole life, we're coming up on 41 years in a few weeks. We'll be married 41 years. This is all we've done. All we've done is help churches get started and help churches hopefully function in a healthy way. I met my wife when I was 16. I wanted to marry her within 3 weeks of marrying her. I told my father, Dad, I've met the woman I want to marry. And my dad, I had a great dad. He's with the Lord now, but phenomenal dad. He never used you. His pronouns were, I learned a lot from him, but he always said we. No matter what it was we. So he says, well, son, we're not getting married at 16 years old. And he says, we still have the university ahead of us. And I said, well, Dad, with all due respect, I'm not waiting 6 to 7 years to marry her. And he goes, well, okay, we are going to wait till you're out of high school. Okay, I can do that. I'll do that. I'll wait till they get out of high school. So I did. We graduated from high school on the 11th of June, and we got married the 14th of June, 3 days later. And I had just turned 18. And my dad was ready to write a check for college, and I says, no, hold off on that. We got some work we're going to do, and we headed off to Brazil. With what we had to our name, we had 2 nice backpacks, and we had zipped together sleeping bags because we were now married. It was all good. And this is how we got started. The first 30 days, we slept on a cement floor in a cockroach-infested room in this little school where we were working in the just on the outskirts in the satellite cities of Brasilia, a little town called Gama. We'd spray the floor, and then we would work in the streets all night. We worked with prostitutes and drug addicts, and we'd come back at night, sweep up the cockroaches, put down the sleeping bags, turn one little light bulb out of the ceiling, unscrew that, lights off. We knowing the cockroaches are all around us. And I knew if this girl can, if she can live through this, we'll make it. And we did. I look at it and I say, how did that work? How did that happen? How did you get here? Why are you here? What's your story? You're part of a group that you're an under-shepherd of the Lord Jesus Christ, entrusted with human lives. And I don't think any of you, like, have forced your ways into these jobs and these callings. Some of you have run. Run, Forrest, run. Run, Forrest. That's you. Away from this. Away from this type of thing. Away from this type of responsibility. But let me just tell you something. I'm excited that you would answer the call, as tough as it gets, because you didn't think this up. Now, I think there's an important base that I want to lay out here. And I've been using this for the last couple of months, and I really wanted to hit it again tonight just with you to start things off. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 12. If you want to turn on your devices there, go ahead. I'm a bit Jurassic. I still use this. It's called a Bible. If any of you remember these? I'm just stuck. I've got all the smart devices and all that, and I'm hooked. This language comes out of course, from Corinthians, but my inspiration for this little piece has come from an author named Ruth Haley Barton, who has been my basically mentor for the last 18 months, reading every word she writes and reading it again, and now my wife and I read it together, and we're just taking it. So I found that that's just sort of the way I work, and when I get in something, it's been incredibly helpful. And Ruth and I have never met. We're about to, but we haven't up to this point. But let me recommend a very, 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 very good book if you haven't read it, if you haven't got it, called Strengthening the Soul of Your Leadership. Strengthening the Soul of Your Leadership. Very, 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 very healthy. Very good for leaders. Doesn't really matter the sphere of influence that you're leading. If you're leading, that's a big deal. In that, in chapter 7, she talks about burnout. And she's basically covering where burnout comes from her point of view. And she unpacks this, I've begun unpacking it a little bit different, but it's very, very important. For we are not bold, verse 12, 2 Corinthians 10, verse 12. For we are not bold to class or compare ourselves with some of those who commend themselves, but when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are without understanding. He's actually saying they're quite foolish. He says, I'm not getting into this. Remember, he's writing to the Corinthians, where the world of rhetoric and teaching and knowledge and information was part of the marketplace. And in order for teachers to get students, And the reason they were always after students is because money came from students. So what they would do at times would discredit other teachers so they could win over their students. And Paul's saying, I'm not getting in that fray. I'm not going to enter into the conversation and compare myself with those who compare themselves by themselves. Then he goes on and says this brilliant thing. But we will not boast. We will not boast beyond our measure. Now, I'm reading out of the New American Standard. Some of you reading NIV, New Living Translation, whatever. So 13 is going to say maybe in the NIV, but we will not boast beyond our limit. We've been given a limit. Some of your modern translations will work with that word, and they will say, I'm not going to boast beyond my sphere of influence. I'm not going to boast, but this is what he says. We will not boast beyond our measure, but within the measure of the sphere which God apportioned to us as a measure to reach even as far as you. I'm not worried about somebody else's assignment. That's what he's saying. I'm not going to compare myself with those who are always comparing themselves by themselves All I know is there has been given a sphere of influence, and that has been given to me by the Lord. Now, I'm just doing all sorts of amplification, but I figured out at this point in my journey, if Eugene Peterson can do it, I can do it. Okay? I just might say it a little bit different. But that's really all we're saying. What Paul is basically saying here is, look, I'm not going to get into the game of comparing myself with what somebody else's assignment is. That's foolish to compare myself with them. They have a total different assignment. That's it. All I know is I've been given this assignment. I've been given this sphere of influence. And in this sphere, I have authority. In this sphere, I have influence. In this sphere, I believe I will have some backing. In this sphere, I will live and die. It may not, and what we're talking about this weekend is in this sphere of planting and pastoring churches in smaller communities. All I'm saying is, if that's the sphere of influence given, then shine, baby. Do it. Do it with all your might. It doesn't matter what your hand is laid a hold of. If your hand is laid hold of a pulpit in a large church, do it with all your might. If you're, if you've been given a pulpit in mid-America or a micropolitano or something that you call them, then do it. All I know is this. If you've been given a teaching position in a seminary, do it. If you've been given a hammer to have in your hand and that's your assignment, that's the sphere of influence God has given you, then do it. Do it with all your might. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do with all your might. Now, I just look at that, I'm just excited that you're willing to lead churches. I don't care where they are. I have no interest in just talking about the size of churches. What I'm really interested in and what I have measured out through the last four decades is when men and women understand that who they are by the will of God, by the act of God, and what their assignments is, and then they just do it. And they do not compare themselves with themselves or compare themselves to other people and other assignments. There's just no life in that. You know where you find life? You don't find life in somebody else's assignment. You find life in your own assignment. You get doggone comfortable in your skin and who you are and how you are. The will of God is not something that's gonna fall out of the heaven in a blueprint. The will of God is in the chemistry, the way he made you to be. We're just different. And we have different assignments. I love this passage. Burnout often comes as when we're trying to overshoot the very assignment we've been given. Sometimes, actually though, because the assignment is so doggone hard, we undershoot it because we want to find something easier. There's nothing valiant in that either. There's really nothing noble in undershooting what the Lord has given us to do. I get wound up in this stuff. I'd rather do this than anything tonight. Just being able to be here to talk to some pastors and look you in the eye and say that, look, here's what we're going to do. Let's make a deal. Let's make a deal. For the next 10 years, evangelize like wild people. Anything that moves, share Christ with it. And when somebody responds, disciple the snot out of them. Can I say that? And from those that you disciple, watch and see if God does not bring some leaders amongst you and they start coming and you could start seeing them and you pay attention to that and feed that. I know you guys are going to unpack that and we got good material on that. That's not my point. And then just be committed to make sure that there's a level playing field here with men and women and all the generations and the reality of the diversity of the ethnicity and languages that make up our towns. Because it's no longer that the cities are diverse. Diversity has come to rural America. You know that. I know that. Where I went to high school in small town Maine, there was one or two African-American families and one Asian. Today, in the city in the city right across the river, it's now 20% minority. where it was like 1%, 2%. We now have like 13, 15 languages spoken in the school system in this small town I live in Maine. In the school system. The world has come to our cities. That's why we just know this diversity thing is not, it's not a light thing. It applies everywhere. But I digress. I love this verse. Oh my goodness. Look at verse 13. But we will not boast beyond our measure. Would somebody lend me your NIV? Because I want to read it in the NIV. Anybody got an NIV that has a Bible? This is a real Bible. We do not dare to classify or compare ourselves with some who are who commend themselves. When they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they're not wise. He just said they're not wise. Actually, what he wanted to say, they're really foolish. We, however, will not boast beyond proper limits. Good language. I mean, you could really read this in all the different languages. Our translations get this pretty accurate all the way through it. Verse 15, we, however, will not boast beyond proper limits, but will confine our boasting to the field God has assigned to us. Mark it down. Get a tattoo. The field assigned to me. And every time you want to jump fence and you feel like somebody else got a better assignment, look down and say, no, to the field assigned to me. Hey, I probably tipped somebody over, but I don't care. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Because we do, we live, because of the way success is driven in Western culture, we always think somebody else has got a better job. One guy said it this way. He says, the task Jesus leaves his followers, the task which will bring his sovereign authority to bear on the world, these tasks are straightforward enough to outline, to teach, though daunting and demanding to put into practice. I love that. This preacher's good. It's daunting and demanding to put into practice. If this was easy, everybody would do it. And especially this conversation, you know, guys, we need pastors in towns and communities all over this country, all over the world. We need this. But remember, this whole thing of evangelism, these essential practices of the vineyard, number one is they're rooted in history. Number two, they're rooted, maybe even much more important, they're rooted theologically. We didn't make this up. God stepped up to the plate. In the most desperate moment, God got all evangelistic on us. What am I talking about? Well, open your Bibles to Genesis. Yeah, if you want to really start, do a real good talk on evangelism, you got to start in the beginning. You got to start where the whole good news started. Because when you read the first couple of chapters of Genesis, and so much debate and talk, I'm not entering that fray. That's just way above my pay grade. I still read the Bible and say, oh, I love it. But let me just say this. When you read the first couple chapters, you realize that's a good deal. However it is in its reality, that's a good deal. And God is a rock star. And then somebody messed it up. Don't get lost in the fray of how it got messed up. You should get lost in that, but just not tonight. There's a lot of conversation going on about this. All I know is somebody messed this up. And we have this verse 15, Genesis 3:15, which is my favorite verse in the Bible. I'm straight up honest with you. I actually believe that the rest of the Bible is a commentary on Genesis 3:15. It certainly is the hinge and the outworking of what God says he's going to do in Genesis 3:15 is really the rest of the story. And when you go all the way to the end of Revelations 21, when the gestation period is over and there's no more pain, no more darkness, no more suffering, no more death, all the tears are gone because the former things have passed away, we're basically back to the future. That wasn't a movie by Michael J. Fox. That's the biblical narrative. But what happened is we had something great going with God and we lost it. And when we lost it, most believe there was no way to get it back. Now, I'm sure you've looked at Bill Jackson's stuff on Nothing's Going to Stop It, and great run through that and some of the more updated material. But let me just look at Genesis 3:15. And again, we have to go there because we're really seeing how God did interfere. This is the good news. I mean, often this is referred to in your commentaries and your history as the first mention of the gospel, right? I mean, that's what it is. He says, I will. There it is right there. We lost everything. I sometimes put myself in the place of God. If the first two humans, if I was God the Father, if God the Creator, if I was God and the first two humans stiffed me the way these guys did, I would have smoked them right there. Poof. No witnesses. No, that's a mulligan. Anybody play golf? That's a mulligan. That one's off in the bushes. I have to leave it there. Let's just do it. Let's hit again. But let's all thank God Phil's not God. No, see, he couldn't give up on the earthlings because he's already made the declaration how much he loved me. He said, that's really, really good. Genesis 1:31 plays deeply into the fact of Genesis 3:15. God had already said he really loves what he'd seen. He really loved what he created and wasn't going to give up on it. But there was no way the humans were going to solve it. So this is what he says. Verse 15, and I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head and you shall bruise him on the heel. He says, I will put enmity. This word is a strong word. Enmity, there's not been any enmity. He introduces into the story something that's actually warring, faction, hatred. This is warland. Enmity is a word chosen, a word that really brings the desire is the death of the other one. You get that? This is kind of early in the narrative, but right out of the gate, God steps up to the plate. He sees that prophetic, and it says to the evil one, there's going to be a war between the seed of the woman and you. Looking thousands of years into the future, the coming of Christ. And God says, I'm setting this up. I've got this one. This is on me. How many of you understand? He's the papa. I like it this way. I like it that it doesn't depend on us to really evangelize America and the world. It's God's job. He's on a mission. And I might say he's doing a doggone good job. That's always been my position missiologically. Evangelism, it's not, don't take evangelism out of your language. Don't take discipleship, don't take the word sin out of your language and brokenness and rebellion and repentance. Don't take these words out. Announcing the good news, that's what he's doing right here. I'm a dad. I'm the papa. I have two adult children, six grandchildren, ages 6 to 17. When we go out to dinner, guess who pays? I do. I'm the papa. There's 12 of us. My daughter has champagne taste on a beer budget. So when we say, we'll go out. She knows darn well. Right, Ross? I'm paying. Papa pays. I take my mother out. She's elderly. She's 100 years old. I don't know, 83 years old. I take her out. Who pays? I pay. I take Janet's, my wife's father, my father-in-law. That was a complicated way to say my father-in-law. When we take him, who pays? We pay. We've come to the point in life where our grandkids, we pay. We pay down, we pay out, and we pay up. We pay. So one night, I was out with my son and his wife, my daughter and her husband. The six of us were out. Three of them work in medicine, okay? So they make silly money. And I said, you know, there's going to come a point here, some point, I don't know, we're just having a thing, maybe it was dessert and the conversation was getting boring, so I thought I'd throw some heat into it or something. I said, hey, you know, there's going to come a day when the check's going to come to your side of the table. You know, just being like, yeah. And they looked at me like, Dad, that might have been the dumbest thing you've ever said. Like, they were like, yeah, so? Tonight, we don't care. What are you talking about? That's a, and they just dismissed it. And I thought I was, you know, being the dad. So we get out in the car. We're leaving the restaurant. And my wife, Janie, she looks at me. And she goes, you're so full of hot air. Now, not many people say that to me. She says, you're just a bag of wind. I said, I beg your pardon. She goes, you with all that flustery about someday the kids are going to have to pay. I go, well, she goes, you know that until your dying day, you will never let them pick up the check. I said, well, I know that. I don't want them to know that. Why? Because I'm the papa. And you and I, it doesn't matter what our assignment is. God is your father. God's your boss. He got you into this. He created you. He called you. He gave you a sphere of influence. This is on him. So whether it's in rural America or midtown America or urban America, it really doesn't matter. It's still the same job. Evangelism, and the guys are going to help us unpack this. The evangelism in small town America, discipleship in a smaller setting. I had a great experience years ago, I don't know, I'm going to say maybe 1976 or 7, something like that. I was in Western Pennsylvania, and I honestly can't remember the year, 77, 78, 79, somewhere in there. But I was in Western Pennsylvania, and, 76, 1976. I lived in Franklin, Pennsylvania. Anybody know where Franklin, Pennsylvania is? Oh, yeah, you know that old guy up there between Oil City and Franklin, the castle up on the Allegheny River. That was a mission headquarters of Life Ministries, the group I worked with in Brazil. So I had been asked to go to a little country church somewhere going down towards Pittsburgh, but it was just corn fields, mile after mile of corn fields. I'm driving along. I'm all of 19 years old. I don't even know how old I was, 19 maybe. But I worked with this group, and I'm driving along. I'm thinking, there's not going to be anybody here. I'm driving 35 miles out into the country. I have 35 miles into the corn. There's going to be three people here and four dogs and 90 head of cattle. And I'm just muttering along, just pitching a fit with, you know. And the Lord said, oh, if there was 50 people, you'd be more excited about going out there? Oh, if there was 500 people, I'm just a little squirt, 19-year-old young kid being trained in ministry. And I was complaining because I knew I was going to and I just had a holy spanking by the Lord in that moment, in my little, you know, big shot attitude at 19. And he said, Phil, if you won't bring all you've got to 5 people, I'll never give you an audience of 500. That was one of those lessons like, yes, sir. I'm sorry, sir. Yes, sir. Sorry, sir. It won't happen again, sir. It was. I'm telling you that. And that was a big moment in my life. Because I realized it had nothing to do with that. Whatever the sphere of influence I'm given, I take. Sure enough, I got there. There was 9 people. 9 people. And they were starting a new church. something congregational, da-da-da. I can't, countryside something congregational church. And so I did. I went there, and I was just, I didn't know much. I didn't give much, but I gave them everything I had with all the enthusiasm of heaven. Well, they were church plant. So they said, they notified me a few weeks later, we're taking you on as our first missionary. Little band of people. And from 76, I think that was 14 years later, they're still, this is like 1990, they're still sending that check every month for four, and I only went back there once. They were like faithful, 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 faithful. Some months that was all we had. We were poor. Through the 80s when Reaganomics and everyone was having such a great ride through the 80s, my wife and I, we never took a vow of poverty. It just worked out that way. We were poor. Living in Brazil in chilly months, we had that was like sometimes the only money we had. So when we moved back to the United States in 1991, I literally had to tell them, stop sending me money. I have a salary. You do not have to support me. I live in America. I have a house, a car, a dog, a picket fence. Don't send me any more money. And they finally stopped. But where did that come from? That night riding through the cornfield when the Lord said, if you're not going to give them everything you have, then you won't do it later. You know, like the people that someday when I'm rich, I'll give money to the church. No, they won't. Just if you have ever heard that, I don't want to burst your bubble, but no, they won't. If you don't tie the $100, you're not going to tie $10,000. It's just economics. One of the things about small town is that I really love pastoring, and it's the one thing I hate about my job today, is I don't get to pastor a local community. It would be unfair because I'm never there. I mean, how would you like to have a pastor that shows up five times a year? You know, so we're just not able to do that at this point with the assignment and the sphere of influence the Lord has given us. But I've loved pastoring. I've loved pastoring, and in culture, I love pastoring. Cross-culturally, learning Portuguese, learning Spanish, and contextualizing in entire other settings. And what I've loved about it is really becoming, and this I really have a lot of my Catholic friends to thank for this. Early on, we really, really switched from a Protestant nickel and noses to really understanding a parish. And I've pastored my whole life with a parish understanding. So I want you to do something right now for me. I want you to take a blank piece of paper, if you would. Or you can write it into your device. I don't know how to say the right stuff anymore. Like, you know. I want you to type in the number or write the number or click in the number of the population where you live out 10 miles, 10 or 15 miles. Take, if you live in this town, go out 10 miles, what's the general population there? Like, I live in a town of 30,000 people, but if I went out, go out 10 miles, it's like 60,000. Something like that. If I live in a town of 200, and I go out 10 miles, and there's 206, well, 206 then. Estimate. You don't have to look it up on the internet, just estimate, you know. How many, you got it? Anybody not got it? We'll help you out. I'll make up a number real quick. I just want to move on. Everybody got the number? Okay. What'd you write down? 80,000. What'd you write down, sir? 60,000. What'd you write down? 50,000. What'd you write down? 70,000. What'd you write down? 7,000. What'd you guys write down? 5,000. What'd you write down, Mike? 38,000. Nobody said 32,497. I'm glad you guys are really, you're doing good. You're rounding off. This is good. Can I just tell you, would you please publish that number and say that's how big your church is? Because if it's not, you're cheating the people. There is a difference between a parish understanding and a Sunday morning attendance. And I wanted to really challenge you to have a paradigm, do the research, look at it. I remember once when I said in a talk that I basically pastored the state of Maine. And I wasn't kidding. And I remember saying to Pathway membership once that our calling and responsibility was for the prophetic future of our state. The prophetic history of our state is being written by our church. I had a guy come up to me right after I said that in a meeting. He goes, Phil, he says, I don't want to push back, but he said, that sounds high-minded. That like our church is going to affect the history of the state. And I said, and I was intimidated for about 3 seconds. And I just realized, like, yeah, I don't want to go to a church that doesn't think that its existence is actually going to change the story of the people amongst whom we live. So I look at the population, I said, there's my church. That's my parish. And in my parish, we have Muslims, secularists, atheists, Hindus. We've got them all. I remember once a mayor of our city being in a talk where I was talking, and I said, I'm the mayor's pastor. Afterwards, he sort of called me on it. He says, Phil, you're not my pastor. I said, oh, no, I am. Oh, yeah, I am. He goes, I don't go to your church. I go, well, let me ask you this. If you get in trouble right now, if your life caves in on you right now, who are you going to go to? You. I'm your pastor. You just don't show up on Sundays. Worldview. Just understand. You've been given a sphere of influence. And get over the nickels and noses. Now, you need nickels and you need noses. But so much of our identity tied and significance tied to that, that'll swamp you. So one of the things we did in the city, I think, okay, if I'm part of the city, I need to have the high school football coach come speak to our men's breakfast. I don't get guys to come into a men's breakfast that can give them, 5 points of Calvinism or, 6 wonders of Hudson Taylor. I'll give them that. That's me. I'll do that stuff. I want the men to know the men. So I had the high school football coach come in, state champion. He comes in. He's doing a good job right until the end of it, and he tells a dirty joke.
At the vineyard.
Afterwards, I said, dude, you got to remember your audience, okay? You're a pretty good public speaker, but remember your audience. You can't tell these guys dirty jokes. Most of them are trying to get healed from that stuff. Oh, yeah. Oh, it got away from me. So we have an AHL team, the American Hockey League, with one league down from the NHL in Portland. So I thought, well, I'm just going to have the coach come in. So we set it up. We had the coach of the Portland hockey team. He came in, off the wall, philosophically, he would just hit him hard, take their legs out, and that's part of life. You've got to beat everybody up if you're going to win. I mean, he's giving us a rah-rah talk. What he talks about with his hockey team in between periods in a hockey game, and he's giving that talk to the Vineyard Men's Group. Then I had the police chief come in from Portland, city of about 250,000 people. Had the police chief come in. But what was I doing? I'm pastoring my parish. To the point that the president of the city council at one point, he truly did become a part of our church. But we became friends long before that actually happened. So God has put you in the towns. You should know the city councilmen, the mayors, city manager, school superintendent, fire chief, police chief. Why? They love your community. They've given themselves to that community. You should know them inside. They need to know you. You need to know their birthdays. You need to send them whatever, however this works. Whatever your parishes is, perish it well. That's what we do. So when people say, well, how big is the church? Oh, I don't know. I think we're about 65,000. Ooh. Why does that impress us? Why does that? I think when we're done, the Lord's going to say, you know something? I gave you life. And in the chemistry, can I walk around a little bit? Because I get bored standing there. I've never even understood it, why you guys all get to sit down and the guy up front always has to stand up. I usually get a stool and sit on it. What was I just talking about? Oh, no, whenever you lose your place when you're teaching, whenever you lose your place, just say, oh yeah, where was it? Oh yes, tithing. Because the church will always get you right back on track. They know exactly where you were. No, this thing of being a part of the community, being a part. When I use the word evangelism, and for a year and a half now, I've been saying this in anywhere anybody will let me talk, but I have not told people how to evangelize. I'll let other people talk about that because the methodologies aren't what is important to me. I think methodologies are good. There's just a whole variety of reality. We got the power evangelism, we got the present, we got the neighboring. We got all sorts of those conversations going on in the vineyard. I just want to know that vineyards truly announce good news all the time, that they are good news in their community, but not just to the people who show up on Sunday. That we're good news to the entire community. That we know, that we, you know, one of my heroes, my hometown, really, it's 2,500 people. And didn't you go there?
Mechanic Falls.
Yeah. Mechanic Falls, Maine. Did you guys go? I heard there was three musketeers that showed up and turned the city upside down. That's the time. I grew up about 3 minutes from where Dick Ray's church is, the Vineyard Church. This is 2,500 people. I have never seen anybody in my life. I don't know of a better pastor in the Vineyard, straight up. And he pastors in a town of 2,500 people. But he doesn't get invited all over the country and all over the world to do seminars and everything. A more faithful, creative, true parish pastor does not exist in the Vineyard. So it's not a matter of the context of where you've been placed. It's a matter of believing the gospel and being a good newser to people, and as they respond, you disciple them around your table. They have welcome in your home, you in their home. And out of those disciples, I'm sure you guys are going to talk about multiplying leaders. Now, what's that process? Because that just keeps putting roots down. It lets it go broader and wider. And then you include everyone. That's EDLD. Now, about a year and a half ago, I was a little more than that now, actually, but I was preparing a talk for our national board, for the regional leaders, the area leaders, and I was just fretting over it. I just so fretting over it. And I just, again, every once in a while I just confess a lot of that. I get rebuked from the Lord at times. It's not I love you, Phil, I love you. I get sometimes, what are you doing? Any of you, am I the only one that gets talked to like that by the Lord? Like, and usually it's great affection, but she's like, Pee-wee, just shut up. And I said, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm just having this little dialogue. I'm not a very fancy prayer person. I'm just not not flowery with it. I said, well, God, I got to, you know, I have a job. I have a responsibility. And it doesn't seem like you're holding up your end of the deal. And I can't go before our board and these regional leaders, these area leaders, and all these big guns are like with a blank piece of paper. He goes, oh, you're looking for a new slogan. Oh, you want something to wow. Oh, you want like a boom, bang, wowie. You want a Batman sermon. You want a Superman. I said, well, no. He said, that's exactly what you want. And I just felt, again, a little bit like, stop it. I said, yes, sir. I'm sorry, sir. That'll never happen again, sir. That's my prayer life. Yes, sir. No, sir. I'll never let that one slip by again, sir. And he says, Phil, if you would just do what the church historic has done, and if you'd bring to the vineyard, bring to bear these essentials. They're not new, but they'll never wear out. And do this until I come back. I said, that's it, God? That's it? You want me to take that to these guys? He says, well, that's all I'm giving you. You can take whatever you want. That's all I'm going to back up. I'll back up evangelism. I'll back up discipleship. I'll back up multiplying leaders, and I'll back up diversity. But you can run, you can add all the bells and whistles that you want, but that's what I'll back up. So I basically put my future on the line and said, guys, if I'm going to lead into the future, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk about these things in every way possible, and I won't get into it because it's not our topic tonight, and this thing called the Vineyard Pilgrimage, and where you a way that we can methodically include from the cradle to the grave, and there's a way to walk through the vineyard in a 60, 70, 80-year reality. And we're unpacking that around the nation, but I don't want to lose track of this tonight. So my job tonight was just to introduce EDLD, talk to you a little bit about pastoring. And pastoring to me is being a parish priest. I don't care what your language is. All I know is that we have good news, and it helps people even if it takes them 20 or 30 years to respond. But we must understand our assignments as a sphere of influence, and anyone that lives in that sphere, we're their pastor. And I mean, I remember going. I remember once I just took a 30-mile circle. I went out 30 miles in every direction, and I looked up all the funeral parlors in that area, and I called them all. I just called them all. No, I didn't. I went and visited them all. And I says, well, this is what I'm doing. I'm a pastor. We have this church. And if there's ever anybody that needs a funeral, I'm your man. I'll do it. I'll go snow, sleet, rain, doesn't matter. Muslims, Hindus, secularists, atheists, Christians, whatever. I said, if people don't know who to do a service, we're the person. We'll do it. In any town we've ever passed in, that's been one of the things. And honestly, one of the greatest. But we're very, 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 very kind. We don't use it as a time to pigeonhole and pound in the gospel, but just the kindness. We have put on hundreds where we've picked up the bill, hundreds of funerals through the years. You know why? Because kindness is the greatest evangelistic tool. Kindness is the heart of Jesus. Kindness to your community, regardless of what they believe. Kindness always pays dividends. Kindness sometimes comes around 5-10 years later. But when somebody goes through their worst moments and you're the kindest person, trust me, when they hit a wall, they will remember. I remember Bob Fulton, one of the original founders of the Vineyard, he once said to us, he says, let me help you out. He says, people will forget 99% of the things that you teach people, they will forget. But they will never forget how you treat them. They will forget most that you ever didactically teach them. But they will never forget how you treat them. That's true whether they've come to faith or if they're still outside of faith. So I think what we're going to end up doing is over the next couple of days, we're just going to have these unpack this with some really good teaching. But what is this evangelism issue? I mean, I've got 17 pages of notes here on evangelism, discipleship, leadership, multiplication, diversity. But to me, that was not my job tonight. My job was to introduce the idea, EDLD, and then in the context. But if I was tonight with many of our urban friends who are thinking of city-centered churches and things like that, to be honest with you, some of the context would change, but not the not the core, not the bones of this thing. This is the gospel. You have to, you work out the context in which you've been placed. So if you're in a town or you think you're going, be the best. Be the best at it. Love them all. I mean, you will look at your city different. When's the last time you went to a city councilor's meeting or the school board's meeting, any public meeting you can sit in on, the PTA, whatever? Just go to some of those. Don't go with your flight. Just go sit in and start to see, like, oh, I'm their pastor. I'm their pastor too. Drive down the streets and say, look at my parish. Oh, how many, what'd you put down for a number? 12th. You pastor 12,000 people. How about you, Donald? 7,000 member church. You're one of the hot shots. Jeff, what'd you put down? You're in a whole nother league, man. I mean, Jim, what'd you put down? 10,000. And you thought you were a small community pastor. See, why do I say see, this is the thing about it is, we can make this fun like this. And if I can make you smile, it makes you happy as the Holy Spirit takes this and just drives it in. Because actually, when I said that it's a humbling thing to be set apart as an under-shepherd of Jesus Christ and trusted with human lives, that means you got 80,000 human lives you can influence. So let's just drop this thing of nickels and noses all the time. I mean, it's important. You gotta have nickels, and noses help. But I think we've got the cart before the horse. You look at your community, love your community, watch as you love them, how they show up. So let's pray. Father, thanks for tonight. And I pray that you would really bless these men and women who lead these incredible churches in all over America. Towns, small cities, communities, counties, that you'd give them big, just visions of what it is to pastor and love people and love the fire chief and the first responders and the school teachers, the nurses and the doctors and the sanitation workers, Father, the farmers, and the small business owners, and single moms, single dads, brokenhearted families, teenagers, homeless, cocaine addicts, rock stars, athletes. Father, I pray that in the vineyard, Lord, you would let the greatness, your greatness, permeate into our hearts, Lord, as we pastor the towns that you've placed us in. Oh God, I pray that you would, in these few hours that we have as a group, that you'd knit our hearts together like Jonathan and David. That we say that it is the Lord between us, though we live in Wisconsin, Minnesota, or Ohio, or Mississippi, Maine, Colorado. But Lord, we're in this tribe called the Vineyard together, and you've put some of us in small towns, you put some of us in large cities, you've put some in the suburbs, you've put some in academic settings, you've put some in farming communities, you've put some on the coast, and you've put some in the mountains, you've put some in the north and some in the south, some in the east and some in the west. But God, we really live and die under your eye. And you have entrusted us, God, with your people, the earthlings, the humans that live amongst us, God. So we would not sin against them by looking by them, Lord. Their confession may be different, but we want your good news to be real, that Jesus Christ, God in the flesh, came, dwelt amongst his own. His own did not receive him. That he lived, he was crucified, and he rose from the dead. He ascended to the heavens and he's coming again. God, because of culture, there's a drift, and we think we have to make this fit for everybody, but Lord, it's the good news that you intervened. You intervened on behalf of the humans. We thank you for it. Now I pray right now, God, you would come and refresh the heart of the saints. Refresh tonight, encourage deeply men and women who have been assigned here across the Midwest and these towns and villages, that Lord, you would encourage in these days, and we could hear one another and encourage and pray for one another and cry with each other and pray for each other's kids. You know, this is what I want to do. And I think it's the Lord. It may not be, but I think it might be. But it could be that it's not. I'm totally sure that it may be. But I don't want to wait until Saturday to sort of like get in a huddle and all for one, one for all. I just did a young adult conference in Santiago, Chile a few weeks ago, and that was the title of it, All for One, One for All. It was awesome. Young adults all over that city. It's crazy, but I loved the title of it. All for One, One for All, in Spanish, of course. But so what I want to do is I would like you all, whether the Lord is leading you to or not, I would like us all to come up and get in a big huddle right up here in the front. I know it's creepy and everything, but come on up. Just come on up. Just let's because sometimes we wait until Saturday, the end of a conference, and we're all in this together. This is the team, guys. This is the team. But didn't we fool? Yeah, come on in. Press right in. This is good. You know, I know. Oh, I touched that guy's elbow. That creeped me out. So stop it. Come on. I'm not continuing until we're all up here. Come on. Unless you can. If you can, then that's totally cool too. See, because this is the team. This is. And then they think this is, you know, a conference on small town. No, I'm going to write some of my friends tonight and say, oh, no, there was a guy. How much did you say, Jeremy? Oh, no, we had pastors of 12,000. We had a pastor of 100,000 with us. Small town America. Who are you kidding? But see, you know why we get into that? That even language categorizes. I just think, personally, it's not accurate. I think actually it is bloom where you plant it and love the earthlings and they'll find their way. They will find their way to you in Jesus. But if you treat them as though they're already Billy Graham, they might become Billy Graham. But if you ostracize them, whether it's the gay community, the addicts, the cocaine addicts, or the womanizers, or this or that, no, you pastor them all. You think you're going to, you know, I had one pastor once said to me, he says, I will not have sinners in my church. And I remember I was sitting across from him because he was mad because a couple from his church ended up in our church and they were scoundrels, there's no doubt about it. But welcome them. We welcomed them. Yeah, they had everything he said they were. And I just remember looking at him and I just sort of pushed him and I said, well, I says, that's all we have at the Vineyard. That's all we have. So you got assignments. They differ in sphere of influence. But Paul clearly said, I'm not going to enter the fray of comparing ourselves with those who compare themselves by themselves. All's I know. And he's saying to the Corinthians, basically, I may not have authority anywhere else, but I do with you, and the evidence is that you are now in Christ. That's really what he's saying there. Now he's saying, I'm hoping that sphere will go on beyond, but I do know that I have this sphere of influence with you. So you may not have the sphere of influence of other people, but you do have the sphere of influence yourself. So I want you to, we're a team. So lock arms. Come on. This is, just let this be a little prophetic here. Let it be a little prophetic. Ben, from my dear friend from Salida, Colorado, who, can I just say openly, you came a little discouraged. You just said, I don't know that prophetically. You told me. Okay. I'm just not that good. Do not wait for me to get all these magical words, because they're not, they ain't going to happen. But Ben, here's your team. These are your colleagues. When you cry, we all should cry. And this is why we do things like this, so we're known and we know other people. Because your burden should be my burden. Your burden should be Joel's burden. You and your wife are not in this alone. That's why, you know, I encourage you to go to that PSR, okay? And you know how we pay for that? Because all these churches give 3%. We all put it in a pot and we take care of pastors like you. But this is your team. This isn't my team. This is your team. And all of you that pastor, Stephen, I didn't see you come in. All of you that pastor, all of you that pastor, this is your team. We're in this together. So Holy Spirit, come right now. It's prophetically, we have locked arms here. We are not by ourselves.